Gabrielle
has joined. Has joined.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Has joined.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We will begin with L'shem Yichud as we study Parasha Aleph, or the first Parasha, first Aleph, first Aliyah, or Parasha Tetzaveh. It begins with Exodus chapter 27, verse 20, and completes at chapter 28, verse 12. This is a total of 14 verses. And we know the number 14 is the same gematria as the name David, or King David, who is a chariot of connection to Malchut and manifestation. Verse 20. Uyata tetzeve et b'nei Yisrael. Vayichu elecha shemen zayit zachatit la ma'or lecha alot ner tamid. This is a very famous verse. The first two words translate literally as "and you, male, will command." Normally, the Torah tells us Moshe's name. So, in this parasha, Moshe's name is never written. So, the word "Wiata" represents Moshe's name. Now, there's a lot of ways to understand that. The word "and you," Wiata, has the letters Vav, which is "and," At, Aleph to Tav, which is the Shekhinah, and the He at the end of the word, going in the direction of the Shekhinah. And this is the essence of Moshe. His connection was always to the Shekhinah, because he was a chariot within the frame of Zeron Pin. He started out at Netzach from his first reincarnation, which was before the flood. His first life was as Abel. And there are many other ways of connecting to this idea of "and you." The Midrash says that Moses was written out of his book, out of this parasha, because he asked God to do that as a way of trying to have Hashem forgive the people, us, for building the golden calf. And how do you handle the idea that the words are "will command"? Because a command we are taught in the Parasha of Tzav in the Zohar is idol worship. And there is much to contemplate in that same idea. Verse 21. Oh, there's one other thing to realize. There's a space before we atah. And wherever there's a space in the Torah, there is Hashem. The way I know that there's a space in the Torah is because even though the chapter is continuing with verse 20 and 21, this is where the Christian monks would establish some spacing. The sages would establish some spacing. And trying to reconcile those two, there's a space before we atah, and there's a space after Israel in the verse that we're about to read. Verse 21. Be'ohel moed michutz laparochet, asher al ha'edut ya'aroch, Oto acharon uvanav, me'erev ad boker lifnei, Adonai yohei wahei, adanu yo yo ahedawanu heyo, ukat olam ledorotam, me'et p'nei Yisrael. The first verse of the next chapter starts out with the same word, Wi'ata. Wi'ata hachrev elecha et acharon achicha v'et banav ito mitoch b'nei Yisrael v'kahano li acharon Nada ve'avihu Elazar ve'itamar v'nei Aharon. V'asita bigdei kodesh le'acharon achicha le'kavot ultifaret. V'ata tedaber el kol hachmelev asher mileti. Ruach hachma v'yasu et bigdei acharon l'kadsho l'kahanoli. V'ele habegadim Asher ya'asu choshen we'efod umil uktonet tashbet mitznefet we'avnet v'yasu bigde kodesh le'acharon. hazahav, v'yed hatkelet, v'yed ha'argamam, v'yed tola'at, ha'shani, v'yed ha'sheif. You realize, or you're recognizing, there's a lot of ets in this verse and in many of these verses in this parasha. And every time there's an et, on the physical level, it represents a direct object. And that's how you identify a direct object in Hebrew. But on the spiritual level, it's connecting that object to the Shekhinah. We asu et ha'efod zahav tekelet b'argamam tolat shani v'sheish mashar ma'aseh hoshev shete ketefot ha'chovrot yihye lo el shene kitso tavichu bar veheshev ahudato asher alav kima'aseihu mimenu yihye zahav tefelet v'argaman Betola at shani v'sheish mash sar. I'm going to say something from verse 8 that we just read that I've never read and I've not been taught from a teacher. With the thought that occurred to me, in this verse and in the previous verse, we have the word yihyeh. Yihyeh is spelled Yud-Heh-Yud-Heh. That's the name of God after the Mashiach. That's the name of God after the completion of our Tikkun. That's where the Vav will shorten and become a Yud. An indication of our rising. But the word Yihyeh has the meaning of to be. It's conjugated, like in English, we say this is, or we are, those different kinds of conjugations. But it's essentially the essence of life, to be. When you see that in the Torah, it's very rare, because the conjugation of the verb tells you which pronoun it's being connected to. In Hebrew, there is, you don't say yihyeh. There's a reason why you don't. Because the conjugation of your verb is going to tell you whether it's future tense or and which person. I, me, you, we, etc. So why is this in these verses? And what occurred to me is that this literally is a connection to the higher level of Hashem that isn't in our physical world, isn't in the spiritual level of Zeran Pin, but is in the spiritual level of Bina. Verse 9. Velakachta et shete avnei shoham ufitachta alechem shemot b'nei Yisrael shisha mishmotam al ha'even ha'echat v'et shemot ha'shisha Anotarim al ha'eben ha'shenit yitoldotam ma'aseh harash even pituche otam Anta Patak Echite Havanim Ashemot B'nei Yisrael Musabod Mishpitzot Zahav Taseotam. Vesamta etchete havanim al kitpot haifod avne zekaron lifne Yisrael benasa acharon etchemotam lifne Adonai yohe wahe adanu yo. Yo ahe dawanu heyo. Al shite kate fav le zikaron. I may be wrong, but in these 14 verses, there was only two times that Hashem's name was in the verse. I didn't count it as we were going, but I noticed. And there's the question needs to be asked, if that is accurate, there's only two times. Why in the sequence are we not referring to Hashem? As like we do in many other verses, many times in the Parashiyot. We've completed the Hebrew reading. Now we will begin to look at the English. Chapter 27, verse 20. And you shall command the children of Israel, and we've talked about Beata Tetzaveh, and they shall take to you pure olive oil, crushed for lighting, to kindle the lamps continually. Now the language here, I didn't realize it in the Hebrew, and they shall take to you pure olive oil. Now we can understand that is that they're bringing to you. So why didn't it say that they will bring to you? What is the meaning of take? What is the essence of taking? Versus bringing, or giving, or sharing. All of these different words in Hebrew. Why is it take? The children of Israel are taking pure olive oil, crushed for lighting. It says oil. Yes, we do crush olives to get the oil. But what is the meaning of crushed for lighting? And this is talking about the continuing light, the ner tamid, the candle, the eternal candle. And every synagogue has one near or above the ark. Why? Because of this verse. Hashem wants a continuous light where he resides, but he resides everywhere, so don't make that mistake. But if he says pure olive oil, why do I need to know that it's crushed for lighting? What am I to learn from that? Verse 21. In the tent of meeting outside the dividing curtain that is in front of the testimony, Aaron and his sons shall set it up before Hashem from evening to morning. It shall be an everlasting statute for their generations. from the children of Israel. There are interesting questions that could be asked within this verse as well. Why is the everlasting light, the Ner Tamid, outside of the dividing curtain? What is the meaning of in front of the testimony? Testimony is the Torah. The testimony is the ark. What is really the testimony? And Aaron and his sons, the Kohanim, will set it up. They will light this eternal light so it never goes out. From evening to morning, it doesn't need to be lit in the daytime. Why? Because you can't see a candle in the sunlight. But this, first off, the English is being added, it shall be. The actual verse is, from evening to morning, semicolon, an everlasting statute for their generations, from the children of Israel. So who are their generations? Because I have this word from, that separates the children of Israel from generations. So it's explaining that that comma, that separation is telling us that the Kohanim are unique within the children of Israel. And that is a separation, which needs to be for the priest to be on a higher level than the general population. Chapter 28, verse 1. And you bring near to yourself your brother Aaron and his sons with him from among the children of Israel to serve me. Aaron, Nadav, and Abihu, Eleazar and Itamar, Aaron's sons. So can you want to explain why there's no and Eleazar? It's missing a vav in front of the name Eleazar. The list should be Nadav, the Abihu, the Eleazar, the Itamar. But Eleazar doesn't have the vav. There are a number of comments over the centuries by various sages about why the vav is missing. You shall make holy garments for your brother Aaron for honor and for glory. And you shall speak to all the wise hearted whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom. And they shall make Aaron's garments to sanctify him, that he serve me. And these are the garments that they shall make: a choshen, an ephod, a robe, a tunic of checkerwork, a cap, and a sash. They shall make holy garments for your brother Aaron and for his sons to serve me. They shall take the gold, the blue, purple, and crimson wool, and the linen. We're going to have a very nice discussion, brief discussion, of what is the idea behind blue, purple, and crimson. I mentioned it in last week when it was first, we first read the Aliyah, bringing the three, four colors of wool. But every color connects to Sephirah. We learn that the blue connects to Malchut, which is why the sky is blue and why the sea is a deeper blue, why the Tehillim string is on the tzitzit. It is connected to Malchut. The crimson wool is Tiferet, because it's in the middle between the blue and the purple. The purple represents Keter. I read an essay, a teaching, that if you mix blue and purple together, you get crimson. Remember the tree of life, that we're not supposed to look at the glyph, because this is a way of it confusing us. And I constantly say, there's the right column of sharing and the left column of receiving and the central column of the balance point. But that's just in two directions, and there are 10 directions. But another way of direction that we all deal with and recognize and are comfortable with is up and down. That tree of life goes up and down. The up is Keter, the down is Malchut. And what is the middle of that? Tiferet. Now, when I read the word crimson, I get a sense of reddish. But it really isn't reddish, and I didn't know that until I read that article. Many men are colorblind, and I'm not colorblind, but I'm shade blind. It's very difficult for me to tell the difference between different colors of the same, or different shades of the same color. So the word crimson, I would think, would be red, but it's really not. It's somewhere between this blue and purple. Verse 6. And they shall make the ephod of gold, blue, purple, and crimson wool, and twisted fine linen, the work of a master weaver. And I think last week's discussion giving me a better understanding of twisted fine linen. It shall have two connected shoulder straps at both its ends, and it shall be entirely connected. The real question is, what does it mean entirely connected? And its decorative band, which is above it, shall be of the same work. From it, gold, blue, purple, and crimson wool, and twisted fine linen. And you shall take two shoham stones and engrave upon them the names of the sons of Israel. We don't know what the decorative band, I just read you verse 9, but I'm commenting on verse 8. Its decorative band, which is above it, shall be of the same work. But what is the decorative band? It's just the colors? It's just the different threads?
An oak.
Yes.
Many years ago when I made a garment, those two bands were like pads. They were black, and they were attached to the ephod. So it was like a, you know, altogether it fit over the shoulders, and names of the children were put on them.
And yes.
And they were black. I remember because I made that out of black fabric. And it was like two pads that fit over the shoulder. And then there was I'd have to go get my garment out of its box where it's been since I haven't been teaching probably about 5 years, so I'm not remembering real clear.
Yeah, well, I, I thank you for your comment, Chana, and I'm not disagreeing with it, but I haven't read anywhere in here that it's a black. So.
Well, it had to do with Joseph's colors. That was, you know.
I'm sure it was part of what you were teaching. I'm just looking at what the Torah is telling us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did write names in gold on it. I mean, it was much research, you know. And
I'm sure it was. I know who you are. I'm just.
Well, that's okay. My memory isn't as good as it used to be either, and that was a long time ago. I made that in the early 90s because I was determined to understand those garments. And believe me, there were a lot of different references. And
yes, and there still are.
Right.
You know, we all know, or I think we all know, that there's a group associated with the Temple Institute, a group of rabbis who have been doing the research and soliciting funds donated primarily from the evangelicals, and they're drawing those, they've built all those things and say they're all ready, except the Torah is very clear that it's only the Mashiach that will be able to build those. There's things that are missing, no matter how much research that we do. There are things that are not yet presented. So all of that work, while it's beneficial in the sense that people can understand things a little clearer, it's not the things that will be utilized.
Hello, I read that the stones were made out of onyx, and onyx is a black stone.
Onyx is one of the items that was donated, and you may be right.
It is, it was, you know.
You have to really question, will the onyx stones light up the way the ephod was supposed to? Tradition says that the ephod was like a computer. They would ask a question that related to the nation as a whole, and the stones of the tribes would light up, and the Kohen would interpret the lighting. He was the only one who was able to do so.
But these were up on the... Okay. These were on the shoulders. I don't think they lit up. That was the ones on the cushion on the breastplate that did light up. And there was a pocket in the back of it that had the two Urim and Tumim. Now, what I did was I just got a clear stone and a black stone up and put in that pocket to represent that.
I understand.
Made many trips to Houston because at that time, even in the craft stores, I couldn't find the various stones. And also, some fabric that would just come even close to trying to be descriptive, which it wasn't. Just had to kind of pick colors, but it was a good experience, and it really helped with understanding.
It definitely would,
And really, what helped me the most was my first encounter with the Temple Institute, because I wrote them and asked for pictures, because the things I was finding in the library, they were various pictures, and it wasn't very much at that time. And Rabbi Richmond sent me a book. It was all in Hebrew. He said at that time there was no English text, but that he hoped it would help. And that's when he told me I should be studying with B'nai Noah. And that group was just getting started in, I think, Tennessee at the time. But anyway, that was part of my journey, so...
Understand.
These verses mean a lot to me. But I see I'm rusty. I'm going to have to get that garment out and look at it again.
It's also these verses are important to everyone.
Yeah.
And this is really one of the reasons that I'm reading these verses each day, and so that we can relate the verse, the Aliyah, to the day of the week and understand the connection to the Zephirah and all of that. So, you know, as I said, there were 14 verses that we read today, and that has to do with manifestation. And isn't that what these verses are telling us? How to manifest the clothing of the Kohani? Verse 9, and you shall take two Shoham stones and engrave upon them the names of the sons of Israel. Now, is a Shoham stone dark? Probably not. Six of their names on one stone and the names of the remaining six on the second stone, according to their births. Now, this translation may not be accurate, but it would be less letters or less words if you say six of their names on one stone and six names on the other. But it added the word remaining six, which implies a separation between the tribes. Are there six tribes come from Leah, which is a connection to Bina. The other six come from Rachel and from the handmaids. So I think the word remaining is to explain to us that there is this separation, but it's not a separation because there are 12 tribes in Israel. And we need to know that. There's actually 14 children as we think of them. 13 if you exclude Joseph because he has the double portion of Manasseh and Ephraim. But this is things that you can contemplate because they're all meaningful. Verse 11.
You also had to read the names from right to left. And see, at that time, my Hebrew wasn't... I didn't have my Hebrew, and I was reading from left to right, and that caused a lot of confusion until
you realized that
you had to go from right to left.
Yes. Now, do you know why Hebrew runs right to left? Exactly. It starts with the sharing. Doesn't start with the receiving. And that's when English you read left to right, it's telling you that it's a physical language. Now, we learn that very specifically when you use the word soul in English, which has five different words for soul in Hebrew. It's the same idea of what we hear from the Eskimos, that they have multiple names for snow and ice, whereas this is what they use. But the essence of, you read right to left in Hebrew because it is a spiritual language. It's connecting to the tree of life just by virtue of which direction you read. Verse 11. The work of an engraver of gems, the engravings of a seal, you shall engrave the two stones with the names of the sons of Israel. You shall make them enclosed in gold settings. Well, in verse 10, we were told to engrave the stones with the names of the sons of Israel. What do we learn from this? Why did we need to have it repeated?
Well, from my research, it was the shamir worm that was used to engrave the names on the stones.
I believe it was the Shamir worm was used to build the temple.
Right.
I never heard a Midrash saying that it was the Shamir that was used, because King Solomon had to go to the negative system to find out about the Shamir worm, according to the Midrash.
Well, I have all my research. I never did away with it. All my drawings and
I'm not questioning your research.
But what I'm saying is it's my memory isn't what it used to be. Too much
I understand.
New material. So I'm anxious to get it out and reread some of this. And of course,
you're,
I couldn't do anything.
You're leading me into a teaching moment.
Okay, good. I'm glad. I felt like I'm kind of disturbing you.
I don't question your research. I know who you are and you, the details that you do. I am not a detailed person. My gift, what Hashem has given me a tool to be, is a teacher in a broad picture. The question is, and this is the truth of what our lives are like today, the phrase that we utilize today is fake news. We all are hearing news that within the structure of what's being said to us, there are both truth and lies in every source, every statement. There is both truth and lies. And you learn how to utilize your intuition to know what is truth and what is lies, which is why I responded to Hannah about the Shamir worm, because it's not something I have read. It's not something that makes sense, because I was told and taught something else about the Shamir worm. But this is the kind of logic that you need to apply in what you hear from people today. You'll hear people say, I read it or I heard it, and they'll give you a source. But the source is not necessarily accurate. Prana did an extensive amount of research, as she has said, and I accept that. And I know that the Temple Institute is very much involved in guarding the red heifers that are found in our world today. When one reaches 2 years old, there's another one somewhere in the world. And they're all found and they're guarded, and that's all being paid by the Temple Institute. So everything is good and everything is not good, because there cannot be any untruth in what the actions are. And people do things as untruth because they think it's true, but it isn't true. And we need to develop the skills to know when that's not true by using our logic, but also recognizing that our logic can lead us astray. You have to develop that intuitive sense. I'm not saying that what I said to Hannah is correct. It's just right now it's correct for me. And I could be proven wrong, and I hopefully am and will be. That's how we learn, by making mistakes. That is the good of this world, the ability to make mistakes. Verse 12. And you shall put the two stones upon the shoulder straps of the ephod as stones of remembrance for the sons of Israel. And Aaron shall carry their names before Hashem upon his two shoulders as a remembrance. What is the meaning of the names being a remembrance? My opinion? The names being a remembrance is basically look at what attributes come out of that name through their permutations, through what we have been taught to do in the Kabbalah. Because in every son of Jacob, every one of those names represents character traits. We just have to permutate them and see what they are. That's the completion of our reading in both Hebrew and English, and a very lengthy discussion, which I think is beneficial. But we are out of time, so we will not be doing the Perek Shirah this morning. Does anyone have any questions or comments or thoughts? We have two more classes today, one at 10:30, which we will continue the preparation for the holiday of Purim, one for at the 3 o'clock class, where we will continue our study of the Psalms. I remind you that Thursday night, starting at 4 o'clock West Coast time, we will do the Hebrew reading of the, or the English reading of the Megillah. I'm doing it here physically in the community that I'm living within. But I will be, it's an early class for our Deep Zohar class. So please make the adjustment to your time for that day. It's going to be starting at 4, not 4:30. And the, that will be your one of two readings of the scroll. The daytime scroll reading on Friday I will not have. I will be doing it here, listening to the a professional reader. So I will not be doing that, and I will not be broadcasting it. I remind you that after the reading Thursday night, I will be doing the ritual for the half shekel donation. And yesterday evening, I sent out to everyone from last year an email with their names to make sure that they're still the same and correct. So I hope you will look at your emails and identify if you are planning to do it this year. You all have a beautiful day. Shalom Gadol. Much peace and serenity.
Thank you.
Was there a question or just saying goodbye?
I was just saying goodbye.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments today and always.
Shalom.
Shalom to everyone.
Thank you.